If you listen and enjoy our show, we're in the middle of a fundraising drive. So if you could go to thebillshow.net, go and press the patron button, you can sponsor us. And that would help pay for stuff. Click the patron button. You'll be glad you did. You'll get a nice warm feeling down in the bottom of the cockles of your heart. And now, on with the show.
Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the ships at sea.
Ships at sea.
And Australia, yep. and 61 Australia. Countries around the world.
And counting.
Yeah, and we're the two fattest lefties on the net.
Well, you know, I'm losing some weight, Randy, so.
Yeah,
you know,
me too, but yeah.
I am.
Hey, you know who I talked to during the week?
Dumpy. Dumpy no. Lefties on the net, because I am dumpy right now.
Yeah, Bill, too. I talked to Bill, too.
Yeah,
I had words with Bill, too.
The Bill Man. Yeah, what do you say?
And he's coming back for show 200, which is five shows away.
Ladies and gentlemen, the original Bill is going to
come back.
You're
the original Bill.
Well, yeah, I am. But he was my first partner in this broadcast before Brother
That's
Randy.
That's why it's called The Bill Show.
That's why it was called The Bill Show.
And we're not stupid.
We don't want to lose all these constant listeners we have. That's what we did.
So he's going to come for show number 200.
Yeah.
This is 195, ladies and gentlemen.
Five more, guys.
Yeah.
This is a lesson in persistence. Yeah. And I want to thank everybody that's been so supportive of the show. The five donors, you guys are great. And no, I don't know them all. That's amazing, isn't it?
Well, I know two of them, and one of them is me.
Yes. The other one we paid off. This is a total vanity production, ladies and gentlemen. Leave it to the people on the left to produce Shock Jock Radio that pays no money. That's us! Yeah. And Randy, even though we don't get a lot of money, we have Christmas. Christmas, as you know, is coming. Did you know that, Randy?
Yeah, it's just after Hanukkah.
It is. It's just after Chanukah. And it's a very, very thrilling time because in the last couple of weeks, we here at The Bill Show kind of feel that Christmas has come for us and all of our people in Democrats abroad and also Democrats at home, because Robert Mueller has started.
It's Mueller time.
It's Mueller time, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. Yeah.
And I've been watching this for the past week, enjoying myself thoroughly. Let's have a look now. It's time for our intro for Trump this time. But Randy, I have a special one. Here it is.
I love it when you get cutting
for Robert Mueller and Donald Trump. Here it is.
All right, and our viewers probably just heard what we heard from Shimon, saying the indictments are out. Shimon, we're going to give you a moment to read through them. You let us know when you are ready.
I can read some of the stuff. At least
okay.
This has now just been released by the press office of the special counsel, so just bear with me here. But here's basically the first line. It says, Paul Manafort, 68, of Alexandria, Virginia, and Richard Gates, 45, of Richmond, Virginia, have been indicted by a federal grand jury, conspiracy against the United States.
Because believe me, there's no collusion Russia is fine.
I have nothing to do with Russia. What do I have to do with Russia? I have nothing to do with Russia. What do I have to do with Russia?
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Santa's coming to town, bitches!
Yeah, man. Santa Claus is coming. Yeah.
Robert Mueller has given us all an early Christmas present, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
And it's in the shape of a frumpy, 61-year-old guy who's up on charges now that could probably land him in prison for the rest of his life unless he learns how to sing like a bird.
Yeah, and who's the other one who's singing like a? Who's the other one who's singing like a bird?
Oh yes,
Snuffleupagus.
Yeah, Snuffleupagus. Oh, that we'll talk about him. He's
he's George Papadopoulos. Oh, so yeah, well, that was it.
George Papadopoulos, who's been working with
close.
He's been working with Mueller for a fucking month, and we're going to talk a little bit about that, but. I have an ego, you know, and for a very small broadcast.
Bill, I do.
William,
you don't have an ego.
Nobody who was
you're the most centered person, generous,
lying prick. Yeah, I'm kind of all right, I guess.
I couldn't lie straight in bed. Yeah,
it's like Ed McMahon. Oh, you're wonderful, Johnny. You're wonderful.
Yeah, you're wonderful, Johnny. Have another drink.
Now, never mind the hookers you killed. You're wonderful. Okay, but in any case, what was I talking about? Okay, Paul Manafort, ladies and gentlemen. Paul is definitely going to be faced with the decision of whether he's going to be sitting there and staring at a large man going, "You're my little puppy now."
Yeah, baby. You got soft hands.
You got soft hands, and you spongy and white. We like that.
Yeah, I like a bit of white boy pussy. Yeah.
You're my best friend, Paul. Why am I laughing?
Like some...
Why am I laughing about prison violence? Because it's funny. anyway, so this is from 173, guys. Okay, we have been talking about Paul Manafort since last year. And
And
this is,
I remember,
this is actually when Mueller came out, when Trump fired, not Mueller, when he fired, oh my God, Comey, when he fired Comey, we did a little show about Paul Manafort and how the White House was really trying to kind of make believe he didn't really exist ever. And this shows you how terrified they are about Paul Manafort flipping. Have a listen to this from 173. It's very short. Here it is now.
Paul Manafort evidently has been revealed to have had now extensive ties to Ruski. So much as that in 2005, on Wednesday, the Associated Press reported that the former campaign manager, Paul Manafort, crafted a plan in 2005, a presentation, to influence American politics for a Russian billionaire aligned with, wait for it, kids, Russian President Vladimir Putin! How did you know? And Sean Spicer was on his podium, you know, which I refer to as kind of a cross, which he deeply, deeply needs to be made to suffer. And he had to try to minimize the influence of Manafort in the campaign. And here's what he said. This is priceless. Here it is.
General Flynn.
Right.
But again,
and
I'm not aware of any at this time, but even General Flynn was a volunteer of the campaign. And then obviously there's been this discussion of Paul Manafort, who played a very limited role for a very limited amount of time. But
he was your campaign manager when you won the nomination, dude.
Yeah.
It wasn't limited.
It was a limited time. time, limited time.
And he's talking limited about time. Flynn like he bumped into him on the street, you know, in the subway. Flynn was not a volunteer. He didn't have acne, and he wasn't standing outside one of your rallies handing out buttons. He was your national security advisor.
That's it.
He was a volunteer. It was like one of the volunteers you see with the placards handing out the leaflets down the street.
That's it.
That you try to avoid around election time.
Well, yes, he wasn't a volunteer.
One of those White House candy stripers.
It was the candy stripers. I had no idea. And my favorite one I was listening to it back, is even then, they were absolutely terrified of Paul Manafort. Because Paul Manafort went from being the man who ran the campaign at your convention to a guy that was around. You know, he's just around. We don't know him. Ty.
He only won me the nomination, but now I've got to run for president.
I don't know who he was. Man of five. So anyway, this came out the other day, Randy.
Bada bing, bada boom.
This came out the other day where they actually tapped, or they managed to get the text messages from Paul Manafort's daughter. And Paul Manafort's daughter had a lot to say about Paul Manafort's links to Donald Trump. And it didn't sound like it, like they only just met. It doesn't sound like they hardly knew each other. Let's go into this a bit. The Trump administration has been working overtime to downplay Manafort's role in last year's campaign. Now, your favorite person, Sarah Huckabee Sanders.
Yeah.
You like her, don't you?
Did you know that JFK and Kennedy are two different presidents?
That's true. That's true.
She said that today.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, folks are dumb where I come from.
Let me tell you, Paul Manafort was brought in to lead the delegate process. That's what they call a fucking convention, idiot, which he did, and was dismissed not too long after that. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders said Monday, Paul was brought in, I don't know, sometime in June? I don't know. And by the middle of August, he was no longer with the campaign. Then Press Secretary Sean Spicer said March. Spicer's statement was untrue. Sanders' claim was misleading. The public record shows that Manafort, who had known Trump for decades, joined his campaign toward the end of March 2016. And Manafort's eventual resignation didn't necessarily indicate he was leaving Trump's orbit. According to his daughter's texts, Randy, Manafort Shand, and this
is she going to be the next White House communications director? She's on the right trajectory. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. You go right ahead. What did the text say?
The text say, and his daughter's Manafort Shand, and I don't know, is that the kid's name? May have wanted to inflate her father's role to impress her friends, but even after her father stepped down from the campaign late August, Manafort Shand, did he name his daughter after him? What an egocentrical ass, was under the impression that he had continuing influence with it beyond the Trump campaign. April 7th, Manafort Shand paints her father as a master manipulator who's close ally of Trump's. Now, I'm going to do both characters here. This is like, I'm going to do the friend, okay? And then I'm going to do...
gag me with a spoon.
Then I'm
going to
do
like
Manafort's daughter. Okay?
Valley girl?
Yeah, that's where I'm going with this. Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. Take it away,
hello
Bill.
There, darling. Is Paul getting a bigger role? It seems like it. Are you surprised? I told you this was a game. You think Paul does anything in moderation? And like if Trump gets elected, guess who's going to be chief of staff? Nah, he'd never accept. Too many skeletons in the closet? Too constructive. Paul is a lone wolf. He has to go his own way. Do what he wants, when he wants, and how he wants. He doesn't have room for other people and their wants and needs. What a guy. Yeah, that sounds about right. He likes the challenge. That's why he's doing this. It's a game for him. He isn't getting paid. Man, I bet he's loving it. Ah, this is pure sport. He's a power-hungry egomaniac. Yes, and he is loving it. Conclusively, him and Trump are perfect allies for this agenda. It's so weird that he's my dad. And he goes on. She goes on. He's very manipulative. And I did inherit that ability, but I don't exploit it like he does. I know all his tactics. They are brilliant.
She said, how old is this chick?
No, she's an older woman. They aren't that brilliant, but they do work. But yes, you're right. You have a moral conscience. Like, he just, like, and his daughter talks about her father. Like, he just tells you the sky is green over and over. And eventually, you're like, it is. I don't possess the ability to just lie like he does. You know?
He told me he was going to get Ivanka Trump clothing at cost.
So they're talking about him being chief of staff when he comes in. The last thing that Manafort's daughter says is something that just chills my shit of how people can be this manipulative. She says, Trump waited a little too long, in my opinion, but I can attest to the fact that he has now hired one of the greatest manipulators. I hope my dad pulls it off. Then I can sell my memoir with all his dirty secrets for a pretty penny. Your daughter loves you, man.
Is that all people think about, the memoir?
I hope a psychotic, narcissistic sociopath becomes president so I can make money on a memoir. That's her.
That's it.
And Paul Manafort and Trump, according to these texts, really, really close. And that's not yet.
Who? Paul who?
Who? I don't know who you're talking about. We found out today that President Donald Trump and his surrogates and supporters
are
distancing themselves that a guy named, and you mentioned it before, George Papadopoulos. Can I have some Greek music?
Yeah, let's have the theme from Zorba.
Zorba! Okay.
Yeah, Zorba.
He's a former foreign policy advisor who sought to connect Trump to the Trump campaign. Public revelation that Papadopoulos has chilled a guilty plea. And the bigger bombshell is... Stop with the great music. The bigger bombshell is that he's been working with Mueller for about a month. And he's been telling a lot. And what he's been telling is that he was the guy that was making connection with the Russians and pushing Trump to actually meet with Putin. And he has emails about this shit that he was doing inside the Trump campaign in March before the DNC released its email. This is what he said, allegedly, in the documents. He says that March 31st, 2016 meeting comes up in court papers filed along with Papadopoulos' plea deal. Papadopoulos admitted that as part of the plea deal, he stated in substance that he had connections that would help arrange a meeting between then-candidate Trump and President Putin. What Papadopoulos did is that he had a contact, and his contact was called the professor.
What?
He met with a guy.
No, this is the tale of our castaways. Wasn't that professor? Oh. Hey, little buddy.
Yes, that's right.
Hey, Gilligan.
George Papadopoulos of the Trump campaign is getting emails from the professor from Gilligan's Island.
Hey, little buddy.
Little buddy. Gilligan, come here. I have some emails. But you know what's really good, too, is there was...
They're printed on bamboo.
They are. Thurston Howell III wants them. But what's even more great is that this kind of guy called the professor, he's not given a name, he's just the professor. He was escorted by an Eastern European woman. And when I read this, I thought, oh, great. Hey, Trump is going to get sunk.
It's Boris and Natasha.
He's going to get sunk by Boris and Natasha.
Yeah, moose and squirrel. It's moose and squirrel.
You literally did a deal for emails with fucking that Boris and Natasha.
That trick never works.
Look, I have emails. Yes, darling.
Yeah, nothing on my sleeve.
Oh, man, I laughed till I stopped. Okay. But it gets better, Randy. I'm telling you, no, it gets better.
It can't get any better, Billy.
It does. It does. It gets better, evidently.
This is like watching a circus.
It is. It is. It's fantastic. And during this time, Trump is going fucking insane.
I'll bet.
Donald Trump, this is from the Newsweek, or I think. Donald Trump holed himself up in the White House and spent the day fuming as he watched the Russian drama unfold on TV. They got kids, come on out here.
Apparently he was upstairs in the private residence. They could hear him yelling downstairs.
Get the kids in here. You got the kids in here? Where are they? There they are.
No, not if there's going to be swearing.
No, there's no swearing right now. Just a cheer from the Bill Show's cheer squad.
Come on, kids.
Let's give it to Donald, who's holed up in the
White
House.
They're still eating Reese's Pieces from Halloween.
Hey, now get them out of here. Get the kids out of here. Okay.
Thanks, kids.
Thank you, kids. As the investigation...
Save some Reese's Pieces for me, please.
As the investigation into possible links between Trump and the campaign delivered its first blows on Monday, Donald Trump hunkered down in his private residence on the third story of the White House, watching a bank of large-screen TVs...
I thought it only had two stories.
TVs blaring. The president grew increasingly angry as the cable news channels broadcast around-the-clock footage of former campaign chief Paul Manafort and Rick Gates turning themselves over to the FBI. The Washington Post suggests that he spent the whole day fuming. I'm not happy. I'm really... Where are my trucks? I want trucks. As details of the indictments against his campaign staffers were beamed across the country, the president reacted with exasperation and disgust.
Oh, dear. Poor Donnie.
And while he was having a heart attack, guess what his son was doing?
Which one?
Trump Jr.
Oh, Forrest Gump.
Yeah, Forrest Gump.
Not the little boy.
The same day, during a Halloween ceremony at the White House.
You're talking about Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah, I'm talking about Butthead. First of all, Trump lets Trump Jr. out to give candy to kids at the White House. And Trump Jr., this is from BuzzFeed. Trump Jr. jokes of swiping his daughter's candy to kids at the White House to teach her about socialism. Donald Trump Jr., the eldest son of President...
I read that and I thought, that guy has absolutely no idea what he's talking about.
That's true, but who jokes about stealing candy at Halloween with the kids looking at him, not knowing what they're talking about? And he said, I'm going to take half of Chloe. Now, Chloe is his daughter, is there. I'm going to take half of Chloe's candy tonight, give it to some kid who stayed at home. It's never early to teach her about socialism, Trump Jr. tweeted.
That is so lame.
What an asshole. What an asshole. They're just such assholes. This is the one kind of message that I want to leave for Trump. And
what's that?
Here it is.
I'm coming to get you.
Yeah, Trumpy. Yeah. Mueller is Rambo, and he's coming to get you.
and believe me,
he's like Elliot Ness. He doesn't. He probably heard that monologue during the Untouchables. How do you get Capone? You know, and he's doing it. He's going.
Do the one that Sean Connery did. You know,
Sean Connery.
You bring a knife, and I'm going to bring a shotgun.
You got a knife? You got a gun?
Yeah, and you bring a shotgun, I'm going to bring a machine gun, and then I'm going to bring a cannon.
That's the Chicago way.
Yeah.
Now I'm going away and make League of an Extraordinary Gentleman and never work again.
Yeah. Or Robert Shaw, what would he say? You know, 300 men went into the water and nobody came out.
And Trumpy, you're going to be one of them.
No, 700, anyway. 700 men went into the water from the Indianapolis and nobody came out. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
We're going to need a bigger boat.
Yeah, Chumpy, you're going to need a bigger boat. Okay, enough of these movie things. Listen, we have a great Randy's Rant coming at you right now.
I'm going to be live.
You're going to do a live Randy's Rant, and we got some fantastic tinfoil hats. Going to have a little comedy with Stephen Colbert, and we'll be back with you in just 1 minute.
Welcome to The Late Show, everybody. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert. Hey. A great crowd. Hey, anybody catch that World Series game last night? Yeah! I've been told it's amazing. I didn't watch it. Because I was focused on something else. You see, it's almost Halloween, and this year is going to be super spooky for Donald Trump. Because special prosecutor and off-duty lurch Robert Mueller just announced the first indictment in the Russia investigation. And who's our first lucky winner? Why, it's former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort, seen here looking innocent before proven guilty. Now, I know it's almost Halloween, but it really feels more like Christmas. Paul Manafort, you're just the first of many. 5 years in jail. Shall I sing to the feds, Trump-a-pom-pom? think how much, just think. Just think how much better those jokes would have worked if it was actually Christmas right now.
Yeah, but you know you could add again.
The charges were actually filed on Friday, but they gave Manafort until today to turn himself in. Wow, we white people really do get arrested differently. They might as well have sent him a formal invitation. Robert Mueller requests the pleasure of your company in federal court. Please check one, chicken, fish, or squeal on Donald Trump. Now, Manafort's been charged with 12 counts, including conspiracy to launder money, tax fraud, and conspiracy against the United States. What's that crime usually called again? I can't remember for some treason. According to the indictment, Manafort worked as an unregistered agent of the government of Ukraine and took in tens of millions of dollars, which he apparently spent on luxury items, including 3 Range Rovers and $849,000 at a men's clothing store. It makes sense. Yeah. It's not cheap to look like you're starring in a middle school production of Guys and Dolls. Apparently, Manafort also spent $934,000 on antique rugs, which explains why he used his one phone call for 800-588-2300-EMPIRE. And rug, please. Now, he's under house arrest, again, white people, and prosecutors think he might be a flight risk. The evidence? They've asked that Manafort's bail be set at $10 million. That is a lot of rugs. You better hope one of them can fly. Of course, Manafort's arrest was a big topic of conversation in today's press briefing with White House press secretary and heir to the Huckabee fortune, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, who said, "We're all missing the real story."
Today's announcement has nothing to do with the president, has nothing to do with the president's campaign or campaign activity. The real collusion scandal, as we've said several times before, has everything to do with the Clinton campaign, Fusion GPS, and Russia.
My God, of course! Hillary Clinton colluded with Russia to lose the election. But we never saw it because we were playing checkers while she was playing three-dimensional lose the election. Now, while we're on the subject, ladies and gentlemen, remember how the Trump campaign swore over and over they never knew of any attempt to coordinate with Russia? Well, how do I put this? Fake news. Because
Today, we also learn about an FBI investigation into former Trump foreign policy advisor and groomsman offering you ecstasy at the ceremony, George Papadopoulos. It turns out Papadopoulos pleaded guilty to lying to FBI agents in the Mueller probe, and the details of what Papadopoulos lied about are papadopadamming. While working to elect Donald Trump, he repeatedly tried to arrange a meeting between the Trump campaign and Russian government officials. You can't do that. That's Don Jr.'s job. He's gonna get jealous. According to the indictment, Papadopoulos lied to the FBI about his meetings with Russian connections, such as a female Russian national described by Papadopoulos as Putin's niece, and a mysterious academic identified only as the professor. Now, we don't have all the details yet. But I am guessing he met the professor in the conservatory with a candlestick. And when the Putin niece in question was told about a potential meeting between the Trump campaign and Russia, she responded, "We are all very excited by the possibility of a good relationship with Mr. Trump." Ma'am, you're not the first Eastern European woman who had high hopes for a good relationship with Mr. Trump. But why? Why? Why did Papadopoulos try to set up these meetings? Because the professor told him about the Russians possessing dirt on then-candidate Hillary Clinton in the form of, quote, thousands of emails. Okay, so we're supposed to believe that Trump wanted Russia to help with the emails? I mean, does that even pass the smell test?
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
It's time to keep your hands and feet inside the vehicle at all times, because it's time again for Randy's Rant.
And it's...
Let's all gather around.
Rant time.
Yeah, Randy's Rant.
Hi, Randy.
I love that intro, Bill. You treat me so well.
Well, you deserve to be treated well.
Oh, stop
it. You deserve
it.
To be treated
palook.
Well. Great.
You big palooka.
Hey, great bit. Okay. Great bit by Stephen Colbert, huh? Just fantastic
I think
bit
so.
By Stephen Colbert.
Yeah. Halloween. Yeah.
Halloween. It's Christmas! Yeah. It's Christmas!
And the scariest thing was the orange pumpkin man.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, that's him. He's the man.
He's the man. Yeah,
he's the Grinch. He's the Grinch that stole everything.
Well, I can see him. I'm going up in my room. Tell the kids I'm not in. You know,
and I want some of Sophie's candy.
Did you see him the other
Chloe's
day?
Candy. I want some of Chloe's
Did
candy.
Did you see him actually in the? He was dealing with the kids who were from the press the other day in the White House. And you know, and he's just
for Halloween.
I was like watching him, and he was doing this shit, which is like fucking weird. He was going, "Tell me something. Are you the kids from the press? I can't believe they have such great children, because you know your mother and father are assholes."
This is when he had them in the Oval Office.
Yeah. And he's like, the kids are looking at him like, "What is your fucking problem, man?
Who the fuck are you?" Yeah. Okay.
You know, mommy. She's a commie asshole who wants to kill me.
You're fake children from fake news.
Kids could be going, just give me the fucking candy. I got to get out of here. All right, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Here's my rant. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of still angry about the Mandalay Hotel incident, which has already vanished.
Yep.
From the psyche of the United States.
And I guarantee you.
And of course,
the legislation that the Senate was going to pass. Think about this. Those
pump stocks
are still legal, man.
Pump stocks are still legal, and they're selling like
hotcakes.
Nothing happened. And you know what? 100 people a day are still dying.
Nothing.
35,000 people a year are still dying.
And nothing will.
Without break. Now, my rant, hark back to December 2012, Sandy Hook, Connecticut.
Yes.
We all know what happened. And a few weeks later, after Christmas, New Year's, all that sort of stuff, it had already faded. But this journalist, a journalist from the Denver Post, a man named Mark Mowey, who does a regular column called Colorado Voices, decided to write a column. Now, this guy, I think, is a genius. Now, bear in mind, this is 4.5 years old.
Right.
But it sounds like it was written yesterday.
Okay.
And I'm going to read this live. I don't do many live rants, but this got me so incensed. There's no recording of it, so I'm going to read it live.
Okay, go, man.
Okay, thanks very much. A grammar lesson for gun nuts. Second Amendment does not guarantee gun rights. Now, that immediately would get me shut down, but apparently not. The Second Amendment is getting worked over yet again after the latest assault rifle massacre, and the usual suspects are issuing dire warnings that gun control advocates want to undermine the Constitution and take away freedoms and rights granted therein. However, unless you believe that the founders' knowledge of grammar and sentence structure was suspect, and what right-thinking person would think that, the Second Amendment, though it does employ a peculiar and sometimes awkward construction called an absolute, is actually very straightforward, a very straightforward call for the establishment of an armed militia when necessary. It has nothing to do with individual gun rights, except in that context.
That's true. And I'll tell you something. The founding fathers were very good at grammar.
Yeah, they were great, especially, you know, Franklin and all those people. Very erudite,
they
well read.
They fucking invented grammar, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, right, I'm with you.
They're the original grammar Nazis, the grammar revolutionaries. Okay, the amendment reads as follows. Yeah. And we've all heard this. We know it by heart. Some people have it tattooed. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, full stop. We all know that word. The main argument about the amendment has always been a semantic one, you know, wordplay. What is meant? What is the intention? I use the present tense because grammatical deconstruction is done in the here and now.
Yeah.
We are not trying to divine the intentions from our personal beliefs of what the founders stood for or what they believe. The founders are dead, 200 years cold, but their words remain alive in the present. And their words, as well as their meticulous grammatical construction, leave no doubt as to their intentions. Read these sentences. Their project being complete, the team is disbanded. Stern discipline being called for, the offending student is expelled. In both cases, the initial dependent clause is not superfluous to the meaning of the entire sentence. It is integral. The team disbanded because the project was complete. The student was expelled because his offense called for stern discipline. This casual relationship cannot be ignored. Now, reading the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia being necessary for the security of a free state, the right to bear arms shall not be infringed, clearly shows the same casual relationship as the example sentences, in this case, that the right to bear arms shall not be infringed because it is essential to maintaining a well-regulated militia. Now, gun rights advocates, such as the NRA and the Gun Owners Association of America, have rather successfully pushed the notion that the first clause of the Second Amendment is merely prefatory, a sort of rhetorical throat clearing before the substantive clause about rights. Now, that means sort of like 4 score and 7 years ago instead of saying 86, 87 years. You know what I mean?
It's
like...
Yeah. which is bullshit.
You spin it out. You spin it out. Okay. Two, certain linguists have said that as an absolute clause, one that is grammatically separate from the main clause, the first clause has no bearing and thus conveys no limitation to the right of the second clause. However, no less a constitutional authority than Supreme Court Justice John Marshall disagrees, declaring that it cannot be presumed that any clause in the Constitution is intended to be without effect. Thus, to call the first clause of the Second Amendment superfluous is an insult to both Marshall and the framers of the Constitution.
Right.
The absolute clause construction of the Second Amendment was quite common at the time and appears in many state constitutions and framing documents. The primary purpose in these constructions is to give the conditions under which the rest of the sentence is true or valid. As a prime example of the ablative absolute, the first clause of the Second Amendment may stand grammatically free, but serves semantically to modify or clarify the meaning of the rest of the sentence. Now, unless you're an English teacher, many people have to sit and think about this. But the fact is, the framer...
I am an English teacher.
You're following, aren't you? You're an English teacher. Yeah. The framers were clearly familiar with the ablative absolute and used it not as rhetorical fluff or flourish.
What you're saying is...
But as a way of clarifying intent. In this case, clarifying that the right to bear arms is granted in the context and within the scope of establishing a militia. Nothing more, nothing less.
That's right. I totally agree with you.
So today, when the paranoid fringe fraction of the NRA howls that gun control is an assault on our Second Amendment rights, we might ask, which rights are those? Unless they mean the right to bear arms, which in itself is a military phrase, in the service of a well-regulation militia, they're just blowing smoke.
Yeah.
The NRA is free to lobby all they want for the freedom of citizens to own whatever gun they choose. It's their right. But to say that gun control somehow attenuates individual gun rights as being guaranteed by the Second Amendment, well, that's just wrong.
Well done. Well done. That's right.
That's just wrong.
Yeah, thank you for that English lesson.
Yeah. That's actually, I mean, we're looking at a forensic examination that everybody's heard so many times. But it's true.
It's absolutely true.
Unless you're forming a militia, you don't have the right to own a gun and have it at home.
If you say the incomplete sentence.
Yeah.
It's obvious. And they know it's obvious. That doesn't mean you give everybody in America a fucking AR-15. It's the stupidest fucking thing in the world. But it will never...
Even if they're mentally challenged.
I'll tell you something, and I'll tell you two again. Nothing is going to change. It won't. It won't change. Until there is a revolution. And if that revolution is somebody like Bernie Sanders, or if that revolution is a Democratic Party that... takes up gun control
and has
with
balls.
Real seriousness. And you know something, outside registration, I mean, just to get something passed, but we are going to have to vanquish these fuckers, like vanquish them. They've got to go. Yeah. And as long as money plays a part in politics, we're in danger. So,
Well, I think... Now, I said it the last couple weeks ago. If we can go to the midterms, which are exactly, next week, they're 1 year away. Mm. If we can go to the midterms saying nobody gets my vote if they take any money from the NRA.
Right.
And if people stick to that. Because most people want gun control.
Most people want gun control. Most people want elemental changes.
And most people don't own guns.
Obama wanted it too. And, people will say, why
are you really worried about splitting the Democratic Party? This is one of the things that really worries me, is that there are a lot of things that both Bernie and people who are in the general Democratic Party do agree with. Yeah. We do agree with a lot of what is essential to change this country, or the country that I love, the country that I talk about every other week. And that can only happen if we...
And we think about every
and
day.
And we think about every day. And the only way we could do it is actually, even though I've talked about the Perez stuff and everything like that, my hope is that somehow the Democratic Party wises up, keeps unified, so that it can introduce something to do with guns. Has to.
Well, if Bernie gets in and he says... as of this day forward, we're going to revise the Second Amendment with the aid of the Supreme Court, you know, and we'll buy back your guns. We'll do all that sort of stuff. And if as enough people support it, it might happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's hope so.
Anyway,
let's hope so.
That's my
Thank
rant.
Thank you very that's much, Randy. Rant. You proved it again.
That made me angry.
I went back to school.
Well, yeah, because I mean, a lot of that stuff, you know, people don't understand a lot of the grammar of the deconstructing.
There's some people who sat there.
What the fuck is he talking about?
What the fuck is he talking about? You're scaring me now.
Yeah, what's the absolute?
Yeah,
you know, what's
that's
that?
Right,
what's
that's
that?
Right. Now, do you have
I have a religious sane job of the week.
Sane job of the week, ladies and gentlemen.
A sane job of the week. Our little friend, John Fugelsang, who is a commentator, and he's often on, the Democrats, et cetera.
Yeah.
He's got a little thing, and he exposes Christian and Republican hypocrisy in 60 seconds.
Okay.
Now, I want you to start your countdown or start your clock as soon as you start speaking.
Yeah.
But in 60 seconds, you're going to say, what the fuck are these people still on about?
Okay, here it is.
Okay, so let's have religious sane job of the week.
The outrageous sane job of the week on Randy's Rant for 195. Here it is.
My mother is an ex-nun, and my father is an ex-Franciscan brother, so I grew up admiring Jesus the way anybody admires mom's first husband. But I've come to view Jesus in much the way I've come to view Elvis. I love the guy. The fan clubs scare me. And I'm glad we're talking about Jesus and the GOP candidates today, because we hear them all talking about Jesus all the time. They invoke his name incessantly. He's like a mascot holding pom-poms on the sidelines. And I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could find a way to get Jesus of Nazareth to come back and run for president on the GOP ticket? They can't pick a front runner anyway. So wouldn't the GOP love to get behind a guy who was a peaceful, radical, nonviolent revolutionary, who hung around with lepers, hookers, and criminals, who never spoke English, was not an American citizen, a man who was anti-capitalism, anti-wealth, anti-public prayer, yes, he was, Matthew 6:5, anti-death penalty, but never once remotely anti-gay, didn't mention abortion, didn't mention premarital sex, a man who never justified torture, who never called the poor lazy, who never asked a leper for a copay, who never fought for tax cuts for the wealthiest Nazarenes, and was a long-haired, brown-skinned, that's in Revelations, homeless Middle Eastern Jew. Of course, that's only if you believe what's actually in the Bible.
60 seconds.
That is fabulous, man. That is fabulous.
Yeah. If.
That is true.
If you
that's
believe what's
work.
In the
that's
Bible.
Great.
Yeah.
If.
Yeah.
If you believe what's in the Bible, what do you
No, look, I mean, I don't diss the Bible. It is one of the great collections of cautionary tales put together over 5,000 years. There's a lot of there's a lot of history in that book, but it's it's mostly fiction.
I've always said it. I read the New Testament, and I kind of like Jesus. You know, because you know Jesus was not who they think he was.
No,
he threw the money changers out of the temple. This is a revolutionary that is detailed
and
in the New Testament.
Radical, and he was killed.
And a radical,
and he was killed by his own Pharisees by his own establishment.
That which you do to the least of me, you do to me. Yeah,
but he was killed by his own establishment.
Yeah.
Because Herod and all the rest of them, because he was touting the, you know, the rule of the bosses. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's right. You know, I mean, he made people very, very uncomfortable. No, if you did. if you look over the New Testament, that is, and that is not the guy that these people worship. They worship a manifestation of it. They don't get it.
They don't.
You know, I can't understand how anybody can
an unwashed brown skin
be a Republican and be a Christian.
33-year-old
single
guy.
Sorry.
Who goes out with hookers and lepers and stuff like that.
That's right. Yeah,
he's not what
Trump.
They think.
He's great.
Yeah.
He's not what they think. Okay, well, we'll be back.
Let's have a little break. Can we play my Halloween break? Because it is Halloween.
We'll play your Halloween break. We'll be back for the tail end of 195 and our tinfoil hat of the week here in just a moment.
Of an overly feminine little boy, choosing the right Halloween costume is crucial for avoiding humiliation during your family's trick-or-treat outings. And luckily, our next guest is here to help us tackle this difficult problem head-on. Jim?
Thanks, Trace. This is Anna Stevenson, author of Actually, He's a Boy, a how-to manual for parenting an effeminate male child. Good to see you this morning, Anna.
Thanks for having me,
Jim. I'm actually very excited to talk to you today because when my nephew, Derek, turned 8, he started acting giggly all the time. My brother is beside himself. He's afraid to let him out of the house, let alone on a night when everybody's dressing up.
Right, well, a lot of parents feel that way, yeah. Jim. But unless you lock him in the house, you run the risk that the ladyboy will sneak out on his own, dressed as a ballerina. And you'll find him pirouetting on somebody's front porch with the whole neighborhood watching.
Oh, the worst nightmare.
But the good news is, with a little creativity, we can disguise your girly son as a normal kid.
Well, show us how to do that,
Come
Anna.
Come on out, Travis.
Oh, looks like we have a little soldier man here.
This is Travis. Say hello, Travis.
Hello, Travis.
Travis has a gun and a threatening knife there. But if you want your child to depict a male-dominated profession, be very careful not to choose one that's been co-opted by the gay community, like a fireman, a cop, a cowboy.
Good point.
Otherwise,
they'll
just end up looking like a stripper.
Right, exactly.
Now let's take a look at Ben.
Ben, come on out.
The world of science fiction is a great place to look for fearsome, violent characters.
Right, right. So you're a scary robot, huh?
I guess so.
This is also a good costume for what I call a prancer.
A prancer.
A son who skips delicately instead of just walking. Ben, take a few steps.
Well, look at that. Problem solved.
I want to be a pastry chef, but she would have
let
me
look at this feature.
Oh, now that's a good option.
Yeah, especially if you're losing control of the situation. Here we go. Next, we have Lance.
Oh, hey, how you doing in there, big head?
Lance has long lashes and an almost compulsive habit of twirling his curly blonde hair around his finger.
Oh, well, not anymore with that head, right?
I'm a big old.
Yes, you are,
aren't
you?
The big head also muffles his list.
Oh, well, maybe that's the costume for my nephew, then.
Oh, could be.
That's a great
now
idea.
Now we have Christian.
Oh.
Blah.
Now, is a vampire really the right choice here?
Yes, well, vampires are flashy dressers, but it's all in the service of seducing a woman. They're virile and dangerous, but here's what I want to show you.
Yeah.
By using copious amounts of blood, we have sissy-proof this costume.
Oh, now that's a very menacing-looking costume. Very masculine.
That's it happens slippery. Sometimes. Sweet. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, that's really neat. Now, I hope you parents at home who have faggy acting little boys have been taking notes because we've gotten a lot of good advice here. Now we're going to head back over to Tracy, who's going to show us how effective trick-or-treating can feed your entire family for a week.
Yes, folks, it's that time again. Time to discuss the news and commentary we listen to because we hate our own heads. It's our tinfoil hat segment tonight.
I love the clip.
Now, if you watch your faggies, you can feed your whole family for a week.
You know, I knew my son was gay when he was running around. He just preferred my daughter had a tutu, and he just thought that was great. And I was like, okay, here it comes. And then it came out a little bit later, and it's like, gee, that Liza Minnelli is really good. And I go, wow.
And now Lazy Susan, Susan's like an icon. She's
Lazy
terrific.
Susan is an icon. She's my son is one of the best drag queens that you will ever fucking listen to her say. And yes, he looked great at a dress, but that was a vicious piece of work. Yeah. That was lovely.
But Americans, like I said, Americans don't do satire very well. That was surprisingly funny.
We don't. That was funny. It was vicious, but it was funny. I like how the fact that if you're more male, you got knives and guns, and little kids are going, I don't want that. And I'm with the kid, I was just like, Christ. Anyway, we have a tinfoil hat.
I've got
tinfoil
one
hat today.
Me.
Who?
Pick me. Pick me.
I pick Randy.
All right. This is what I've got. Okay. This is a, I think it's funny. I've got from my favorite channel, Weirdest News, it's called. We have a thing about Domino's and Ford. Ford, you know, the car, Henry Ford, who've teamed up to create. Yeah. And these things, this is not on the drawing board. This is actually out there doing it in a
Jesus,
trial.
All right, I'm scared.
I'm not scaring you, okay?
Yeah.
I don't mean to scare you. This is a. Yeah. It's all about. They've got self-driving pizza vehicles. Now you've got cars like the Tesla and whatever that you get in. You put in where you want to go. And it uses Google Maps or whatever to drive you there. Now, I have a friend across the street's got the big Tesla. And if he wants to, he can do that. And he'd even drive it into his own garage and park it, but without touching the steering wheel. Now, what they've done, though, is they've taken these Ford Escorts or whatever they are, Focuses, and they've made them self-driving. There's nobody in them. The back seat's been turned into like a pizza oven thing, and hang on,
you
order your pizza from Domino's, you put in your address and you pay for it.
Never have to go
outside
again.
No, you do,
again.
But that's and that
Ever
people
again.
Hate that. It doesn't come right to your door. It only comes to the curb.
You will never have to not be on the internet. Yeah. Or watching
but
cable
you have to,
TV.
You're given a 4-digit code. You go out, you punch in the code, the back window comes down, and the pizza comes out.
That's it.
But
that's a brave new world, man.
That's
a
brave
great.
New world of self-driving cars that bring pizza to your door.
Heaven forbid.
Yeah, so have a play,
get
play
off
the
your
clip.
Ass.
Play the clip. Because people don't take my word for it. These are actually out there already working. For I think the last 3 months.
Oh, great. I just wait for the time where all the pizza vehicles like turn on us, like in the Terminator. So all these people being chased by little pizza vehicles with turrets and guns.
I can't wait.
So before the Terminator Revolution,
it'll be the Domino,
turn on us.
The Pizzanator.
Yes, that's right. Have a pizza.
I will be pepperoni.
That's right. I will be. So here's the Domino's pizza guys bringing new AI to our world now. Oh, joy. Here it is.
The future is now here. Domino's Pizza is doing something that I think could work. Domino's Pizza and Ford teamed up to bring the self-driving pizza vehicles. Domino has already explored some pretty edgy ways of getting its pizzas to its hungry customers, including flying robots and others that roll along the ground. But this time, they've thought of something even more futuristic and even better. They've teamed up with Ford for a self-driving vehicle research project that could one day mean goodbye pizza guy. So all you people who are looking for a career as a pizza delivery man, think about something else because there's no future there. The venture is described as a consumer research and is aimed at learning how customers feel about having their pizza delivered by a self-driving vehicle. The Ford vehicles will be driven manually and carry researchers fixtures on board, with participating customers able to track the delivery vehicle through GPS and then receive a text message when it arrives. That text message will also include a code to unlock a heat wave compartment inside the vehicle and retrieve the pizza. If this goes to the hood, the rims are gone, all the interior seating is gone. Shit, the steering wheel will probably be gone too. Ford's Fusion Hybrid vehicles will be used for the trial, and the heat wave compartment is based on the same technology used to keep pizzas warm in Domino's Delivery Expert vehicles from 2015. The trial begins in the coming weeks with randomly selected Domino's customers in Ann Arbor, Michigan, to be offered the chance to participate.
And if you're young and need a job, fuck
yeah,
you.
Yeah, Bill. Bill, your pizza is ready.
Fuck you, too. I love it, but Bill, you walk into supermarkets these days, and they got these fucking machines instead of cashiers. Yeah. Now, cashier used to be something kids could do when they were in college. Yeah. Not fucking anymore. How about high school? Not fucking anymore. Yeah. And now they can't even deliver pizza fucking anymore. So not only we have a fantastic society where no one leaves their fucking house.
No, you have to leave your house.
And are too fucking lazy to go off to the pizza parlor and pick up their pizza or pay some poor kid to do it. Now we're going to have drones and Terminator-style vehicles.
What happens to FedEx? They'll deliver everything.
Bring us our pizza.
They'll deliver everything, not just pizza.
That's right. We'll never have to leave the house anymore. We'll shop on Amazon.
Yeah, we're those people in. We're those people on the spaceship
and shut the fuck up.
We're those people in the spaceship in Wall-E in those little, runarounds. Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, that is we're at a minute. We're at 1 hour.
Yeah. Well, that's all right. You play your tinfoil hat.
So. Oh no! I'm gonna hold my tinfoil hat this time. Yeah, sure. Okay. It's an hour. But listen, I want to thank everybody that's been out there supporting the show. If you do love the show, check with us. You can, if you're listening via Podbean, you can actually just click the patron button. And if you happen to listen on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever platform you listen to, go to thebillshow.net. Everything Bill Show in one place.
Yeah.
That's thebillshow.net, and press the patron button, and please, sir.
Can I have some more?
Can I have some more?
Please, sir. Willie, listen, we're having too much fun doing this show. I'll pay you. If you just show up once a week. You're my therapist.
Willie. Yeah, and so are over 13,000 people every 30 days.
Yeah, you're my therapist. Can I introduce our playout?
What? Oh, yes, you can. Good.
Ladies and gentlemen, Melbourne's own Akadaka, ACDC. Yeah. You know, they've even named a street after them. ACDC Lane. Akadaka, we've just lost young Mr. Young. Unfortunately,
yeah.
But Angus and everybody else is still there. This is probably one of their most famous songs, and it really talks about our show and what's going on with what's going on in America.
Okay,
now, the reason there's only a
stairway
to heaven, but there's a highway to hell, has a lot to say about our morals.
There you go. Anyway. We'll see you next time, guys.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Because we're playing Akadaka. Yeah.